This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
What is going on in the world of Delphi, Indiana? The case against Richard Allen, the trial date getting closer and closer, and the man who has been following all this from the beginning, showing up in the courthouse, firsthand experience, and now also has the motion to dismiss in his hand. Bob Motta, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. I know you've been waiting patiently to get this and now have gone through it. I haven't seen it. What is in this motion? And tell me your reactions. That's a lot of questions so, right there.
Yeah, it was, what's up, T? It was a hearing that took place on the 18th of March. And it was a couple of hearings, actually. One, and we discussed it, I think, probably in an episode or two ago. Mm-hmm. And it was the motion for contempt against the defense team that was filed by the state and Nick McClelland. And then that took up a better part of the day. Mm-hmm. And then Baldwin and the defense had a motion to dismiss based on destruction of exculpatory evidence. I had sat in there that day. It was a very long day. I was trying to take copious notes. You do the best you can.
Yeah.
You know, but writing for 6-7 hours, you know, nothing is going to compare to the transcript, which is, you know, always going to be optimal because mm-hmm. you're going to get every word that was spoken and you're going to get every word that was spoken accurately. So, yeah, a group of us, you know, pooled some cash together and we sent a payment to the court reporter and had her prepare the transcript specifically for the motion dismissed because I just wasn't interested in the motion for sanctions and contempt, just because it's not really relevant to the underlying trial. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just something where they're continuing to try to punish the defense counsel for what they consider to be their egregious behavior. So at any rate, yeah, that finally came through Easter morning. We got it. It was mailed to us. And Kara Winicky, who was one of the attorneys that was handling the writ of mandamus and the original action stuff, she's the one who had ordered it for us. And so, yeah, we got it. And then it's interesting, man. And basically, the primary witness for Baldwin before Gull basically shut the thing down was this officer, Todd Click.
Yeah.
And Todd Click is one of three cops that had continued to investigate pretty thoroughly for a couple of years, frankly. These alternate suspects that were named in the memo that mm-hmm. were, again, you know, for people that are not familiar with Delphi or, you know, don't follow it as psychotically as I do. there was a memo that came out back in September of last year that was very lengthy, 136 pages, where the defense really basically laid out their entire theory of defense, which centered on alternate suspects that were responsible for the killings of Abigail Williams and Liberty German. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they went into great detail. And when that came out, this Todd Click, who was, again, the first witness that was called by Andrew Baldwin, was referenced in that document quite a bit. And, you know, like the pushback that came from that memo was interesting in light of what was contained in it. You know, even taking myself out of, you know, the fact that I'm a criminal defense attorney, just looking at it objectively mm-hmm. as a concerned citizen, the things that were coming out, which again, all come from the state's discovery itself.
So yes.
The way that it works in criminal cases is law enforcement investigates crime. They compile the evidence. Once they make an arrest, they then tender their evidence that they compiled during their investigation over to the state. The state then goes through it, and then they start turning it over to the defense because they have to. It's called reciprocal discovery. And so everything that the defense was talking about in the memo was directly from the state's own evidence. It was tendered to them. So, like, as you read through that thing and you're like, wow, I mean, they have these other guys, like guys talking about being at the scene and spitting on one of the girls' heads. And is he going to get in trouble if he has a valid excuse? And, you know, forming these connections with these two kind of hate groups like, you know, Vinlanders and, you know, Norse paganism and, you know, white supremacy. And, you know, so it was a lot for people to digest. And it was easy for people to be able to dismiss it as just smoke and mirrors by the defense. You know, this is just typical defense attorneys doing what they do. And so when this hearing rolls around and you have the actual cop sitting on the stand with the cops from the Unified Command, like staring at him, you know, while he's testifying under oath that he doesn't believe that they have the right guy, that he was shocked and confused as to why they arrested Richard Allen. It gives you a different perspective. It gives it more gravity. It gives it more weight. And I felt it was so important because you and I talked about this. Like none of the mainstream media was covering the motion to dismiss.
No.
Like everything was focused on this contempt thing. And I'm like, who cares about that? It's like they can handle that whenever. If they want to, they want to ding them for something, they're not taking them off the trial. They're going to proceed to trial. They're going to be the defense attorneys. Gull's going to be the judge. McClellan's going to be the prosecutor. This thing's going in less than a, you know, like it's happening. There's no stopping it. So it was really, it was unbelievable in the sense that what Baldwin was really doing, and Baldwin is one of the defense attorneys, and he's the one who argued this motion. He was really forcing the judge to hear all of the information firsthand from one of the cops that conducted the investigation that was contained in the memo, because Baldwin is convinced that Gull never read the memo, you know, and in his perspective, he's like, I don't know how, if she never read it, to judge for herself the validity of it, how we're ever going to be able to get that in at trial as a defense, because at trial, you just can't come up with things out of thin air in order to try to throw a jury off. Like the judge is going to require some kind of offer of proof that what you're going to be suggesting to a jury has legs, that it's actually a plausible counter explanation of what happened to the girls. It can't just be something made up out of whole cloth. So like, that's why it's so important for the defense to be hammering this home with her. So when it gets to that point, when it gets to the point where they have to give that offer of proof at trial in the hopes that the judge isn't going to say, no, I'm not allowing you to put any of this stuff on. That was really kind of why he was going through this. I mean, like if you were to ask Baldwin, did he think that they were going to really get this thing dismissed against Richard Allen? He'd say, no, of course not. But in order to get the narrative out there to the judge, more than anybody else, not to the public,
who should already have it.
She should already have it. Yeah. But we know from the pleadings, like when he filed his third Frank's memo, you know, and he's in the actual pleading itself, he's saying, judge, I'm kindly requesting you to reread the memo. You know, we just want to be, because you could just tell that he's like, she didn't read it, you know, and we knew that they were booted off the case about a month and some change after that memo drops. And I think, I can't remember if it was a month or
it was right around there.
You know, so like everything starts happening with that. And, you know, there's no point in time where you would think that Gull is just going to pick the, she's like, all right, these two guys are gone. Now I don't have to deal with this memo thing. And she had admitted on the record, she had never finished reading it. She didn't look through any exhibits. So they knew that. So there's no reason to think that after they're removed from the case, and while that's pending for months, that she would have picked it up just out of curiosity and read it. And so as soon as they're reinstated, almost within days, she turns around and says, okay, I'm denying your motion for Frank's hearing without having hearing.
Yeah.
And gives no real reasoning behind it. So that was kind of the basis of why they were doing this. And Click testified for an hour. You know, and there was a lot of objecting going on from the state's perspective, because the state's argument is like, look, you're coming at us with a very specific thing that was destroyed or lost or whatever, however you want to term it, which is this Brad Holder interview.
Yep.
Brad Holder happens to be one of these alternate suspects that the defense likes. And is the defense is very curious why all of these guys just kind of fell off the Unified Command's radar.
Yeah.
You know, so he's trying, and it's very difficult for the defense to show bad faith, you know, because there's two things that a defense attorney has to show in order to win on a motion to dismiss. You got to show one, that in fact the evidence was exculpatory or helpful to the defendant. And then two, that it was destroyed or lost due to bad faith on the part of the state or law enforcement. So you've got to show both those things. Mm-hmm. Now, you're never going to have a situation where you're going to get a cop that's going to get on, you know, come in the courtroom, get on the stand and say, oh, yeah, yeah, I destroyed that. You know, like we had a different suspect. So, you know, that wasn't helpful to us. And we didn't want the defense to ever get their hands on it. You know, so he had to go about showing the strength of the investigation that was going on by this Click, Ferency, and Murphy, these three cops, who were all legit.
Yeah.
Like very, like 20 plus year guys. Two of them were on the you know, Joint Terrorism Task Force with the feds. You know, one of them's an Indiana State Police detective. The other one, I mean, these were all legitimate cops. These weren't like bumbling fool cops that were just, you know, so Baldwin's going through trying to lay out the foundation of how this investigation has legs. It's real, you know, despite the Odinism stuff that no one wants to believe is true, you know, but these guys, there's smoke here.
Yeah.
There's smoke here. Or there's smoke. Yeah. You know, so, and the state kept objecting. They're saying, look, we're here on a interview from February 17th of 2017 that was deleted or overridden or whatever the case may be. Like, how is any of what he's talking about relevant? Because he's talking about interviews after the fact, and you know, and he's trying to get the judge to like understand, look, in order to prove bad faith, we have to show that Unified Command was aware of these alternate suspects and that it was a legitimate avenue.
Yeah.
And that once they had arrested Rick Allen, they had no interest in the defense being made aware of any of these guys or how thorough that investigation was, because that creates a problem for them. So it was a lot of that, man. I mean, it was a lot of that.
It's shocking. I mean, of course they don't want to be talking about it because it makes them look bad. But that seems to be the only reason they don't want to talk about it.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.